listen, think, learn, grow. Listen, think, learn, grow. Live.
This is Metaphysical Universe, exploring science and spirituality with Dr. Douglas Kelly and Dr. Vicki Hunter.
Hello and welcome to the Spirit of Life program for Wednesday, November 22nd, 2017. I'm Dr. Doug Kelly here with Dr. Vicki Hunter.
Good evening. Glad to be here.
And, of course, Michael Kelly joining us as well, producing the program.
Good evening, everyone. Always happy to be here.
We'd like to welcome all those joining us live as well as those listening to the archives. We appreciate your time. And, of course, tonight we have a special guest with us, which we'll get to in just a moment. The Spirit of Life is a weekly service and educational program of the International Church of Metaphysical Humanism. Our mission is to explore and empower the human spirit, as well as to explore science and spirituality. In addition to this weekly program, we also have several other educational programs, including EmpoweredRecovery.com, which offers help for the friends and families of alcoholics and addicts, Paranexus.org, an association of anomalous researchers, MetaphysicsInstitute.org, our flagship school that offers bachelor's, master's, and doctoral degrees in metaphysical science, spiritual counseling, life coaching, holistic healing, hypnosis, paranormal science, and others areas, and Thomas Francis University, which offers standalone metaphysical courses and degrees at tfuniversity.org. As is customary, I'd like to read our abbreviated 9 principles of belief. The first one is, do no harm, do right. Number 2, we believe in the indomitable power of the human spirit. The answers we seek already exist within us. Number 3, we believe that we alone are responsible for and capable of solving human social problems. 4, we are all equal, one planet, one race, one ancestry, one destiny. 5, we recognize and honor the divine energy that exists in all living things. 6, we are physical and spiritual beings. Consciousness survives death of the physical body. 7, self-acceptance, self-responsibility, and respect for free will creates self-completeness. 8. Metaphysical education and practical life skills empower the human spirit and enhance the human condition. And 9. Expanding human consciousness leads to human evolution and peaceful coexistence. And for more information and an expanded version of these principles of belief, please visit us at metaphysicalhumanism.org. Now, as I said, we have a special guest with us this evening. His name is Dr. Frederick Woodard, and he is the author of a new book on perceptual hypnosis as well. Dr. Woodard received a Doctor of Clinical Hypnotherapy from the American Institute of Hypnotherapy in 1992, a Doctor of Philosophy in Clinical Psychology from California School of Professional Psychology in 2002, and intensive training at the Milton Erickson Institute in Arizona. He received the New England Paranormal Research of the Year Award in 2012 from CC Productions. He is a registered and certified clinical hypnotherapist and has been a member of the American Board of Hypnotherapy, American Psychological Association, New Hampshire Psychological Association, Psychological Hypnosis. Dr. Woodard was deployed for a month in Louisiana during the Katrina disaster in 2005. He is a direct great-grandchild of Chief Medakawando of the Abenaki Nation, Charlemagne, and the Merovingian kings. Dr. Woodard, thank you so much for being on the program.
Well, thank you for having me. I'm glad to be here.
Yeah, and so your new book, Perceptual Hypnosis, is, well, for one thing, it's a beautiful book. I mean, it's well-constructed. It's got a great cover, and in looking through it, the concepts that you write about so resonate so much with what we teach. Kind of give us an idea of what you mean by perceptual hypnosis and the concepts that you teach in it, and I'm sure in your practice, that help people get past the things that hold them back.
Well, the idea of perceptual hypnosis is how to understand what really happens with hypnosis, and how it also helps us evolve our consciousness and our awareness to see the world more accurately. And in order to do that, we have to be able to differentiate what's really out there and what's really going on. And that's part of the process of perceptual hypnosis. Is the principles include being able to have positive experiences in the world, to have a diverse perceptual possibilities, so they're not rigid and fixed, to have positive experiences in the world, and to be able to have identify with other people, which means to be able to put yourself in their shoes, have empathy, and notice where they're coming from. And as you do those things, things start to open up. And that was the principle that made me want to write about this. I found a better way to explain it. I have a colleague out in Colorado that made a nice comment to me after he looked at the book. He said, "I can't compare this to any other hypnosis book."
Yeah.
And that's exactly what I wanted. It's original.
Well, yeah, I agree with that. It's certainly different than any hypnosis book I've seen, but go ahead and carry on.
Well, so that's the process of trying to, you know, differentiate more of what's in the universe. And that entails all the different things, including, you know, aspects of spiritual and paranormal aspects of our existence that some people can see and some people can't. Now, it's always the great question of how some people can see more than others. And
right.
It's those kind of principles and utilizing those principles I've just said that help you get there by having more diverse possibilities. And the rest of the book kind of takes people through step by step to try to help them open up more and understand that so that it's a positive experience.
In that sense. Well, you know, one of the things I appreciated about it is that you actually address the paranormal, and you just did in your comments. And so that obviously you're open to that. And that's honestly what we need in the scientific community more of is, look, we don't expect people to go way out on a limb and you know, buy into stuff that really doesn't have a decent rational basis, right, for belief. But people need to be open to it, and you are, and that's a good thing.
Right. Well, it's like you just said, the way you just said it, that's the key. I mean, how are we going to evolve with our consciousness? How are we going to evolve as souls and spirits on the earth if we don't open up to new things and acknowledge things that are happening? Now, people can't always say what really truly caused that, but I remember a story by one of my research clients who talked about how they couldn't find an insurance paper that was important after their father died, and she was laying in her bed one night, and at the bottom of her bed she saw her father, and her father told her to go to the house and move a rug, and under that rug was a loose board, and under that board you'd find the insurance paper. And she called her sister 3 o'clock in the morning. They drove over there, they moved the rug, they moved the board, and there was the insurance paper. So how can you dismiss that? That was a real-life connection to a subjective experience.
Agreed.
You know, something happened. Something took place. And what that was exactly is hard for us to describe or prove, but there's evidence that some of these experiences are not just, you know, made up. They make sense. They have positive outcomes.
You mean they're more than swamp gas?
Yeah, I mean, and the opposite side of that is people projecting things onto things that aren't really there. That happens too. So it's like the differentiation, being able to identify what's real and what's not real, you know?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And that's, Michael and I were talking about this before the program tonight about paranormal stuff. We've talked about a lot. And we've talked about paranormal on this program a lot. And one of the things is that, you know, most of it can be explained with client psychology, the bulk of it, the rest, some, you know, hoaxes, not as many as you'd think, but there's some of that, and natural explanations that are just false positives or misidentified. But there is a handful of compelling incidents and experiences that you just can't easily dismiss, like you said, like this experience that you just revealed. And I've heard those before. That those actually happen probably more often than people think. You know, somebody's died, right. Somebody needs the papers and they can't find them, and they get that kind of a thing. Somebody around them, if not them, has a visit from the deceased and tells them where the stuff is. I've heard that several times.
Yeah, and that's the interesting thing. There's history and history. I mean, some of it I've experienced through with people, and some of it I've researched just reading tons and tons of books, and it goes all the way back. And I read some book written in the 1800s, and there were mothers here when there was wars over on the across the ocean, and their son would die, and they would know in the morning. There was no TV, no radio, no letters took weeks to get there, and they'd wake up and say, "My son died last night. I know, I saw him." And then a week later, here comes the letter, and at that very day, her son had died.
Well, you know, that can certainly be explained with in a couple of possible ways. You know, there's ESP, you know, telepathy. Yeah. There's also consciousness and the interconnectedness of us all. And especially with those, it's like quantum entanglement. You know, we become entangled on a quantum level with those people we're close to, especially biologically close to. And so there's an explanation that is completely scientifically valid.
Oh, yes, and that's the whole thing I mean by evolving consciousness. It's like we need to embrace these things to understand them, not dismiss them or say they're not real. Try to explore them, and how do we get this knowledge? You know, what can we do to enhance it more? And that's sort of what my book is kind of focusing on, is how to get people to be more open to have more of those experiences.
Dr. Hunter, I'm sure you've had many experiences like that yourself.
You're singing my choir.
Yeah, I figured.
Yeah. I have a question, Dr. Woodard. If when you're working with clients, do you use a lot of your own intuition to know maybe how to guide your clients, or knowing if there's a false positive, or kind of understanding what you're hearing with your clients?
Yeah, clinically that happens, you know, and I always validate it with them. You know, I'll always, you know, express to them what I'm feeling and see if it fits for them. And usually it does. The projection part you have to worry about, too. It's like if you're projecting something. I know when I was doing a research paper on hypnosis that I published in, like, 2005, I did a whole exercise with everybody, and then I would interview them on what they experienced. And when I was starting to do the process of doing it, I had this one male client, a research client, who I was starting to do it, and something was telling me I should say to him, you can keep your eyes closed. I know you want to open them, but you can keep them closed. But I didn't, because that would change what I did with everybody else. And when I got to the point where I asked him what he experienced, he said, well, at the beginning, I kept thinking I could open my eyes. You know, and I was like, wow, see there, I should have just said that. That would have fit perfectly for him. But I didn't know, and at the time, I just didn't want to alter the way I was, you know.
So trust your intuition? Is that the lesson?
Yeah, it's to trust your intuition, absolutely. But you always got to make sure it's your intuition. It's not some projection, too. That's the other problem. Sometimes we have intuition, sometimes we project.
Dr. Hunter's talked about that a lot. Go ahead.
It's true. When you're, and again, when you're working with people, I'm just kind of exploring here. Can you intuitively distinguish what somebody might be remembering from a past life as opposed to a memory, a buried memory from this life?
I don't usually try to do that. I help them kind of try to understand those things for themselves and come to their own conclusion. Because in the clinical setting, it's sort of about their empowerment and what they're struggling with, not really what I think about that.
I guess why I'm asking the question is, you know, a lot of people might have traumatic memory and they believe it's from this lifetime.
And a previous one or this one?
This one. They think, oh, I had something happen to me as a child, and they carry that with them for a long time, but it may not be a truth in this lifetime at all. Is there a way to distinguish that Is there a way to know what kinds of questions to ask to determine what's from this life or another life?
I don't really do that with clinical clients. The other issue with clinical clients, it's when there's traumas in this life, it's important to allow those to unfold naturally for them.
Yeah.
Because otherwise it's in the psychological aspect, otherwise the problem becomes that you may have like altered their memory or something, you know, and that's really touchy stuff, especially with traumas. I find that the ones that are researchable or able to be explored are usually people that have already resolved the issue, you know, or the person that the traumas are past, or the people that have harmed them are no longer around. But sometimes those are really touchy things.
So we're relating more in terms of a therapy session as opposed to incorporating hypnosis or
hypnosis. What I was thinking, you mentioned, you know, traumatic memories. I'm very sensitive to, like, some of those things can really be traumas they've had in this life, and you have to be really careful to make sure you don't, you know, do anything that harms their retrieving those memories properly. You know what I mean?
Absolutely. Would you use hypnosis in those cases?
No, actually, I wouldn't use hypnosis. I would use the principles of my book, but in a more conscious way, not hypnotic way. Because actually, if somebody remembers something in hypnosis, it's not really it can't be evidence in court. However, unless there's physical evidence that came with it that did prove that was true, you know.
Interesting.
So, so that's a problem. That's why I'm very careful in that area. When people are exploring past lives, sometimes they do as you probably are aware, patterns appear. And whether those are true, we can't prove, but I do tend to believe in reincarnation. And the interesting thing is, psychologically, they're significant anyway. You know, they're speaking to something that they're experiencing. So, I mean, in my perspective of that. And so you just work with that. You know, I don't know if that answers your question.
Yeah, no, it's just, I'm just exploring. Because there's, you know, we have alternative realities because, you know, perceptions of reality, and of course many layers of dimension, many dimensions of time space and psychic connections and quantum entanglement, and we can go on and on. But it's specifically when you're working with people, and this is just why I'm asking, is there an area that you tend to focus on more, or is there how would you treat various experiences that people would be having? Like, how do you approach that? I guess it's how do you determine when somebody is having some kind of a psychic experience versus a past life memory versus something else? How do you know to guide them, or
well,
do you guide them
at
all?
I let those things unfold naturally.
Oh, okay.
I've always been really an individualist, and I think, you know, in the sense of each person's unique, and so I never try to. It's actually a phenomenological principle too. You try not to think you know, and you just help them explore, and then, you know, they'll come to uncover what they need to uncover, you know, when they're ready. And so you just help them.
Well, and that's absolutely the way to do it with spiritual counseling and life coaching. You help them arrive at their own conclusions, rather than induce or introduce any of your own.
Right, and so it's I wouldn't even like be thinking about that. I'd just be open to what's going to happen, and then as information unfolds, then you kind of help them explore that too. So it kind of unfolds by itself, I find.
Now, Fran has just asked a question of you in the chat. What about genetic memory, trauma that's occurred by an ancestor and has been recorded in the DNA and passed down? Can that be accessed by hypnosis and identified, you know, with reasonable accuracy?
I'm not sure. I do agree that that is true, that there is genetic memory. I know that Carl Jung was one of the first ones to speak about that.
Yeah.
You know, that we carry the history of our ancestors in our being. I don't know whether that's carried spiritually or biologically, but
that's an interesting point.
Whether you could prove that, there's different types of proof. There's self-subjective proof where the person really believes that all by themselves, and then there's, you know, our scientific evidences of truth. So it's hard because I think it has to be what's right for that person, you know.
Well, here's a case. I know I've talked about it in the show before, but I knew a girl a long time ago when we were in grade school, and she would have reoccurring nightmares of being burned alive. And she was like my psychic buddy, too, you know. And we'd always talk about the occult together and have her little secret world. And finally, it got so bad, I said, you got to tell your mom. And so she did. She went to her mother and said, I'm having these dreams and there's a fire and on and on. And her mother didn't say a word. She went to the trunk and pulled out a picture of her own grandmother, meaning my friend's great-grandmother. Now, those two, first of all, looked identical. I saw the picture. I mean, you'd think that that was some kind of, you know, photoshopped her into the 1800s. But in fact, they had, her family had migrated from the U.S. to Canada and lived in Massachusetts. And in fact, her great-grandmother was burned at the stake. Like she was one of the last.
Well, that's proof. That's subjective proof. You know, that's a great case.
But how would you find that if you're working with somebody who's having these kinds of nightmares? How would you work with somebody to explore that kind of an experience if they, like, she wouldn't have come to that conclusion on her own unless her mother had told her?
Well, obviously, it's not a memory like I was thinking. That's something that we can prove didn't happen to her in this life.
Right.
She keeps
okay.
having these experiences, so that has a big meaning right there. So then you take it from there, and you could probably try to explore the family history to see if it's possible to. In some cases, you won't know. I mean, I introduced the beginning of my book about how many of us, of people on the face of the earth right now, don't value their lives that much. Would some people even think about, like, ending their lives? And yet, that we've all probably had thousands of ancestors that gave their life so we could be here.
Yeah,
literally.
Definitely.
You know, and we don't remember them. Their stories were lost in time.
Well, I actually have a question to both of you, if I could, Dr. Woodard and Dr. Hunter. In your experience with past lives, do you think it's possible that a lot of these could be actual genetic memories that have been carried through DNA?
Yes, I think that's very possible. I know that when I was a child, and I remember watching movies sometimes where there was the battle between the whites and the Native Americans, and when I saw a unity between a Native American and a white person, like a romance thing, and then people trying to harm it, I would have all kinds of chills running up my body, and come to find out one of my grandfathers was that very person.
Very
interesting.
Who did marry a chief's daughter and did have lots of strife and trouble trying to bring peace. And so that, I would say, nobody told me that. I didn't know that at the time. I learned that only recently, maybe 10 years ago. And so I was picking up on something.
Very interesting. And I kind of have a follow-up question that it's something I've thought about a few times, and that is, when it comes to reincarnation and the success of lives, does that follow the same linear line that we know of as time? Or when you reincarnate, do you always go forward in time, or is it possible that you don't?
Well,
I'm fascinated. My most the most evidence I have about reincarnation of love is Ian Stevenson's work with children. That just the stories, the research that he's done is fascinating. So I don't know. That, I mean, if time is all happening simultaneously, which some people say it is, then you can go back and you can go forward. That would be the possibility if it's truly all happening at the same time.
Well, and that's where they say a lot of science fiction comes from, as they travel to the future. And there are authors who claim they have. My first experience with that, Michael, just to add this, is doing a reading for someone years ago, and I was so confused, and it just hit me like a ton of bricks. You know, I said, "Oh, you're from the future." And in fact, he was a scientist, and he just smiled and said, "I understand what you're talking about." So he had memory of the future, which is fascinating to me. And it wasn't because he wasn't a sci-fi writer. He's just he was a scientist. So I personally don't relate to any future lifetimes, but what do I know? If I haven't allowed myself access to that consciousness, then, but maybe I have, I don't know. See, so I think that I have to be open to all those possibilities, like I think anybody has to. And for me, it's like the same with working with people. I had to really keep an open mind about if somebody thinks that's a past life, that's okay. If they think it's a genetic memory or could be, that's okay. And they don't want to believe in past lives, that's okay. It's like whatever you believe. So I suspect that Dr. Woodard would agree with that, right? Like, that's what they want to believe.
Well, yeah, I mean, I always try to strive toward finding what is true, but whether we can do that in the short time we have, I don't know. But I mean, if there's evidence that would suggest, like that case you brought up where her grandmother actually was burned at the stake, that's kind of evidence to go in one direction over another. Doesn't mean both weren't true.
Mm-hmm. You know? No.
I mean, that's the whole thing about creativity and truth. It's like, That woman very well could have been, you know, if there's past lives, and she could have died that way herself, and then on top of it, her grandmother died that way.
You know, I just had an interesting epiphany, realization.
Okay, sorry, just the way you said that, it kind of.
I know. Well, no, and I'm. Brace yourself. I'm serious. I'm sure. Well, for me, it's that. I'll try to be brief about it, but. Then all this talk about, well, Michael's question on can you be reincarnated from the future type of thing. And I recalled nearly 10 years ago, I was on a paranormal investigation in Colorado. And it was a high strangeness case. And there was a number of things that were happening that we just couldn't readily explain. In fact, it's been in the news too. I'm not going to say any names because I don't want to bring any attention to it, because there were also a lot of things that were very suspect. But when we were there, a number of things happened. And just to give you a brief idea, and I've talked about this before, I was sitting in the kitchen at the client's house. It was mid-afternoon, and everybody else, my other colleagues, were out on the patio with the clients. They were all just chatting out there. And I was sitting at the kitchen table on my laptop talking with another colleague on Skype video. And their 14-year-old son walked by me to the sliding glass door and cracked it open and said something out to his parents. And at that same time, I heard a noise like water running to my right. And I looked over across the little center island to the countertop or counter beyond it, which where the sink was, and the water had turned on by itself. Nobody was there. I was sitting right there. The water turned on by itself. It was knobs. It was cool. And I went over and I turned it off and looked under the sink to see if there was any gadgets under there. There wasn't. And it was amazing. And there were a couple things like that happened. And so then there were that later that evening around 10:15, we were all sitting outside on a break. It was a beautiful this was early June. It was a beautiful evening, starry. And, you know, it was a subdivision, and there were trees. And we had a limited view of the sky, but one of the my colleagues was looking up. And he says, "Look, look, look, look." And we all saw a staggered series of literally UFOs. I'm not saying they were flying saucers. I'm just saying that we didn't know what they were, but they were like little dashes in a staggered V formation streaming across the sky. It was really cool. So here we were with this case, and we were unsure whether we were dealing with, for other reasons, we weren't sure whether we were dealing with spirits or whether we were dealing with aliens or what the heck, because this guy claimed to be abducted too. So here's where the epiphany comes in. That same evening, we did a table tipping seance, which was really cool. And one of my colleagues, who's obviously psychically inclined, basically unexpectedly went into a bit of a trance. And I was kind of bantering back and forth with the client, and we were not arguing at all, but we were. You know, he was saying, well, what about this? And I'm saying, yeah, but how do you explain this? You know, and we were kind of going back and forth like that. And my friend, we'll call him John, he said, stop fighting. And I looked at him. That was very unusual for him, completely out of character. And I looked at him and I said, we're not fighting. We're just discussing this, John. And he didn't say anything. John, you all right? And then I don't know why, but I said, who are you? And he said, we are many, something like to that effect. And I'm not going to go through the entire dialogue, but here's the interesting thing. Basically, if this was all real and true, this was an alien talking through John and basically told us that they had been watching us from the beginning of time, and I asked him questions, okay, well, where did we all come from? They didn't know. And they had no answers for that. But he made this comment directly to me. He said, you are from future. I says, what do you mean by that? Well, how can I be from the future? This is the first time we've talked. He says, no, it's not. And I even get a little few chills right now. But I never understood that. And he said, you are from the future. I said, how can I be from the future? And it never made any sense to me. And now what it's done is it's kind of confounded me. Thanks a lot, son. But anyway, comments, Dr. Woodard, if any?
Well, I mean, it's possible, right? I mean,
I guess anything's possible.
Well, the whole idea that I remember when I was doing some research on stigmatas, I remember in a book by Padre Pio, who was an Italian stigmata from the 1960s, I believe was when he died, he made a comment that you could pray for the peaceful death of your great-grandfather.
Huh. Yep.
And so, you know, that would imply that you could affect the past.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and but again, you know, there's different people's views, and so I know we psychologically we can affect the past just by seeing it differently, but could we literally change the past? That may be possible too. Who knows?
Interesting.
That's what all those stories are about. But there are people, and there are incidences where people claim to have come. I mean, I've seen those things, and there's stories written, and it's interesting.
Dr. Norm has a question in the chat. If you have personally dealt with clients who have passed life connections and recognize that connections in the present?
I haven't had anyone who's done that, no. Not literally.
Dr. Angie has a question.
The partners were, you know, the people that they're connected to in their family and their partners, but not something where, you know, it's like really paranormal kind of.
Okay.
And Dr. Angie has a question on if you've experienced anything like that, meaning animals or other beings being remembered during sessions. And I don't know whether she means from previous lives or what.
Yeah, I have had, you know, as far as animals and other beings, I've had different people bring up experiences and about different things with animals and various creatures and things like that.
Interesting.
I didn't pass life, not necessarily, no.
Well, Well, it's pretty common in Buddhist and Hindu reincarnation dogma, I'll say, that past lives have been many different forms of life. So that would be consistent with that.
Well, good. So, interesting stuff, Dr. Woodard. What's your burning message, you know, from your book, from your practice, from your life? What message do you want to get out to people?
Well, to just be more open to experience and the paranormal and the spiritual in a more deep way, sort of the message you're talking about, that, you know, our spirit, to be open to our spiritual growth and I guess really identify with others is a big one too. Like, you know, the theme of us loving ourselves so that we can love others.
Yeah, good points.
The more, you know, global way, not personal way, but the more loving each other, and, you know, to how we can do that is by opening up our perceptions, seeing the world in a more positive way, and seeing things more clearly for what they truly are.
And good points.
That's kind of what the themes are, you know.
Which is sometimes an alternate reality.
Well,
my normal is not always somebody else's normal, so
that's for sure. I'd like to encourage our listeners to pick up Dr. Woodard's book, Perceptual Hypnosis, A Spiritual Journey Toward Expanding Awareness. I did put the link on the broadcast page up near the top. It's also on the archive page in the description for tonight's program, so you can click on that and you can go to his website and find his book there. Dr. Woodard, I really appreciate you coming on the program tonight. It's been a real great discussion.
Yes, I've enjoyed it too. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, anytime. And you're welcome to stay on the line and mute your phone if you'd like, or you can hang up and listen to the rest of it if you'd like, or you can go to bed, whatever you'd like to do. But if you hang on, we'll chat for a minute after the program. So if you would like, we're going to be wrapping up pretty quick here, but if you'd like a card pulled, put your name in the chat room right now. And for those new to the program, the cards are inner oracle self-discovery cards. They're basically cards of 54 cards and several suits that, now Michael's got me saying it. Several suits that, basically are nuggets about life, practical life skills, and to get you thinking about your life and about how to improve things. So we've got a first.
Sorry about that. I got one for, everybody's going up there really fast. Dr. Angie, I pulled number 40 for you, which is in the life skills suit, relationships. Healthy relationships are interdependent and win-win. They are not dependent or codependent. Accept others for who they are and not for what they believe. And don't be judgmental. Otherwise, end the relationship regardless of who it's with. For healthy relationships, we must add more than we subtract. This card can refer to a healthy or toxic relationship or to the relationship of one thing to another. So it's just a little message about assessing relationships and communication there for you. So maybe Michael would like to draw a card for Fran.
Oh, I'm absolutely happy to pull a card for Fran, and I have pulled one from the middle of the deck. Wild card number 9, blank.
I love that one.
Drawing this card puts you on notice to dig deep within for the answers you seek. This card is what you want it to be, what you need it to be. It is all that you desire it to be. Remember that the unconscious mind speaks to you in the quietest of voices and the loudest of ways, often overlooked. The universe is always on your side. Dig deep, for your answers lay within.
That's a good one. Nice little message there.
Yeah, it is.
I just pulled a card for Dr. Darlene. 37, groundedness. Remain grounded by looking for evidence that supports or refutes claims or beliefs. have a compelling and defensible basis for your beliefs, especially esoteric beliefs. An absence or denial of evidence does not assure a truthful conclusion. Be willing to examine beliefs, assumptions, and opinions and weigh them against facts. Suspend judgment until you have considered all the facts or have more facts to uncover. Adjust opinions when new facts are found. Ooh, that always gives me the shivers too, because there's a little shift there, you know, and being grounded. So, I don't see any other names in the.
Jeff Skoglund needs one, and Dr. Woodard.
I nearly lost you there, Jeff. Okay, Michael, you want to pick one for Jeff?
All right. Oh, this is a classic. It's number 28. In the service to self and other suite, is it?
Suit.
Okay.
You're killing me, Smalls.
Excellent reference, by the way. Do no harm, do right is the most powerful principle to live by. Doing no harm includes words and actions to the self and others. Doing right means to also take positive action where there is a need without infringing on the free will or rights of others. Always strive for the highest good for all concerned, including yourself. Do no harm and do right establishes the foundation for all other principles.
Good.
And by the way, I was just being facetious.
Yeah. He's got quite the wit, that one. I'm not sure if it's a half-wit, nitwit, or a whole-wit.
That's hereditary.
Yeah, that's there you go. Ooh, bite.
Right back at you.
Yeah, good for you. I don't see anybody else now. And Dr. it's really
Dr. Woodard. You want to pull in Dr. Hunter?
Oh, sure.
Dr. Woodard.
Happy to do that. Open mindedness.
Yeah. That's if he means that one.
Yeah. You know. Number 38, open-mindedness in the life skills suit. An open mind is sensible and grounded. An open mind avoids preconceived notions, especially ones that are based on a personal agenda, a pet theory, or a preferred belief. An open mind is not gullible or credulous. Rather, an open mind thinks critically and searches for additional possibilities. It absorbs knowledge and searches for credible solutions and conclusions. And, you know, I think that card came up because it best describes you.
I agree.
Yes, it was perfect for tonight, for what we were talking about. Absolutely perfect.
It does so. It's awesome.
These cards are cool, I'm telling you. They have a life of their own. Unexpected.
Yeah.
All right. Any final comments, Dr. Hunter?
Well, I'd like to thank everybody for joining in the chat, and of course, our usual crew. But good to see Zach here, who's still healing from his stem cell transplant this summer, and good to see Jeff here. And you know, thanks for joining in, and always being so active in the chat. We appreciate you very much.
Yeah, we appreciate everybody listening to the live program. And those listening to the archives, too. And if you're listening to the archives and you get a chance to join us in the live program, we'd love to have you. Thanks to Dr. Hunter, as always, for helping out with all this stuff. To Michael for producing the program. Thanks again to Dr. Woodard for joining us tonight with his interesting book and information. And until next week, listen, think, learn, grow, and live. Good night.
Good night, everyone.
Good night, everyone.